This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
The needs of a number two center and a top pair, top flight defenseman. Well, there's only limited pieces on your roster that can produce a result like that. And so actually at some point this week, I don't know if it's tomorrow or later in the week, but we're going to be having our first TSN trade bait board of the offseason coming out. And I wouldn't be surprised to see two players from the Jets on the list in both Patrick Laine and Nikolai Ehlers.
From earlier this week on the big show, that's TSN Hockey insider, TSN Hockey senior writer Frank Saravelli, causing a bit of a stir here in River City. Talk about that to start off this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We have 3 hours of Winnipeg Jets talk for you. We have 3 hours of NHL talk for you. We have 3 hours of Stanley Cup playoffs talk for you. Alongside my colleagues Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Gentlemen, a pleasure to see you on this Saturday morning, the 5th of September, and a happy Labor Day long weekend to you both.
Yeah, to you guys too. What's up, boys? Yeah, it seems like that was quite a long time ago. I think that was on Monday's big show, if I'm not mistaken. So we're talking about 5 days ago. And absolutely, I think there were a lot of nervous Jets fans this week when they heard that Patty Laine and Nick Ehlers were on the trade bait board, or were going to be on the trade bait board. And I think we're going to get into it here this morning, boys. But yeah, I mean, we have to start off with the fact that we don't know if Kevin Cheveldayoff and the Jets are even entertaining the idea of trading Nick Ehlers or Patrick Laine. So we should get that out there right away, right? Not saying that Frank Saravalli hasn't done, you know, his research. We know Frank really well going back to his days covering the Philly Flyers. He's obviously an excellent reporter, but I think it's speculation at this point. So we should throw a little, you know, cold water on that right away, right, guys? But I think when you have a team like the Jets, who are desperately in need of a second-line center and a top-pairing, you know, right-side defenseman, and also, you know, a second-pairing left-side defenseman, right, Dave? Mm-hmm. I think that's why you see Ehlers and Laine on that trade bait board. So I just think we should get that out of the way, you know, right now. There's no reason to believe, you know, that Chevy is actively shopping either of these guys, right? So, I mean, we can get into, you know, what the return would have to be for Laine or Ehlers. And I'll tell you this much, guys, it's going to have to be of equal value. It's going to have to be a really good player. It's going to be a first line center, or it's going to have to be a top pairing defenseman.
So it's not Chad Kilger and Oleg Kavrygodovsky.
I don't think those guys are still available. I think they retired from professional hockey shortly thereafter. They were traded to Winnipeg back in the 90s.
Not to pick a bone with Frank, but if you're writing the trade bait board, shouldn't you know if they're going to be on the list? I mean, he sounded almost like quizzical. Like, oh, I'm not so sure if they're going to be there. It's like, but it's your board. You should know.
I found that to be a little curious. Yeah. It's like, just say they're going to be on there. Yeah. And don't pussyfoot around.
Yeah, like we get it. They're going to be on the board. I mean, look, as Ted DiBiase used to say, everybody has a price. And WWE.
Yes, that was back in the WWF days.
Yeah, I think it was WWF days. But
Ted DiBiase, I believe, is a minister now.
Really? Didn't know that. But the point is,
have you prayed in his church before there, Mr. Ginsberg? Have you
it's
preached
expensive
before him?
He's still got the million-dollar belt, that's for sure.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, he
I'm not sure. I'm not sure if Virgil's there, but
no, no. Look, the reality of what I was trying to say is that these guys, there's nobody really on your team, exception of probably Mark Scheifele and Connor Hellebuck on this Jets team, Josh Morrissey probably as well, that you're saying is untradeable. So, the reality from the Jets' perspective, eventually, I don't think now, but I think eventually, is that, well, and to be honest with you, Nick Ehlers either, because look at that contract.
Sure.
I mean, that contract is going to be one you're going to look at for years and be like, that's a value contract for a guy like Nikolai Ehlers.
Well, and that's why, Dave, sorry to cut you off, but like, to me, Laine makes a little bit more sense than Ehlers. I'm not saying that the Jets should or will trade Laine, mm-hmm. but I agree with you. That's when I saw Laine and Ehlers, I was thinking to myself, like, we've talked about this. Ehlers is arguably the best forward on the Jets, the most skilled forward on the Jets with the highest upside, along with Laine. And his contract, what does he have, 3 years left? 3 or 4 years left at $6 million a year? Like, you could argue that Ehlers is an $8 million a year player, or maybe even more, maybe $8.5 million a year. So
Ehlers just has five years left.
5 years, yeah. Right? So, yeah. You know, why, like, that makes him even more valuable. So, sorry, I just wanted to get that in. That, to me, Laine has 1 year left on his contract, and he's obviously going to be in the, you know, $8 to $9 million a year range, maybe even higher. So I understand that in that respect. But for me, because Ehlers has 5 years and you have the cap certainty, it makes even less sense.
Here are the only, from my perspective, and I'll listen to other people's opinions. I'm charitable in that way. The only way you are considering trading Patrick Laine is in one of two scenarios. One, the return is Jack Eichel from the Buffalo Sabres, a superstar top line center.
What about Connor McDavid?
Connor McDavid, sure too. Sidney Crosby, you can throw Crosby's name in there if you want. Nathan MacKinnon, sure.
Yeah. Because those guys are available.
Yeah, because those guys are readily available. Yeah. You know, because teams are trading Austin Matthews. You can throw Austin Matthews in this scenario as well.
I think you're trying to use someone who was maybe a little unhappy on their team is what you're.
I'm not even trying. I think the whole concept of trading Laine is patently ridiculous. Unless you find out in the course of the negotiations with Patrick Laine, mm-hmm. you know, when you're trying to sign him to a contract extension that you can now sign him to, that you find out that he's got no interest in signing long-term here. And there's been no evidence to that effect whatsoever.
Yeah, and we got something on Twitter that suggests that. And I got to tell you, I don't see it in Patrick Laine.
Yeah.
Like, people, like I've never kind of seen that sort of attitude. Yeah. I mean, he's a laid-back guy who's not going to be overly effusive. But he could be, like, living it up in California, and I suspect he'd be the same. So, I mean, you know, people have to be a little careful when they start to, you know, analyze his personality and say, oh, well, it's clear that he's not wanting to be here. Because I've just never seen any sort of indication of
that. And the only reason why I think they connect those dots is because it's Winnipeg. And I say that as somebody who lives here, you know, with my family and you know, is raising their family here and loves Winnipeg. You wouldn't hear the same commentary, that same sort of, does he want to sign there long term, if he, you know, had been drafted by the LA Kings, or mm-hmm. if he'd been drafted by the Tampa Bay Lightning, or quote unquote, a more desirable market. So, I mean, I do think that, look, I get what the trade bait board is. The trade bait board is an opportunity to create some discussion and create some hype for, for all the other teams that aren't currently playing in the playoffs. So, you know, because all the other teams, the fans of all the teams that aren't, you know, Vegas and Dallas and, you know, as up to of yesterday, Vancouver and Colorado, those fans are focused on the playoffs still. All the other fans are focused on the offseason and the hot stove. And this is a way to drum up interest in their teams and play the speculation game. So that's what the trade bait board is. It's not gospel by any stretch. It's, you know, you throw a dart at the board and maybe you hit a couple trades that do end up happening. But like I said, unless the return is Jack Eichel or an absolute superstar stud number one center, not a number two center, because Patrick Laine is a goal scorer of almost unequal value in the NHL. So you're not trading Patrick Laine for a number two center. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't make any logical sense.
No, absolutely not. And, you know, I think you make some good points. I mean, we do have to take who is on the trade bait board with a grain of salt. I agree with you 100%, Drew. And I think, you know, aside from the fact that Patrick Laine is in the last year of his contract and he's due for a long term, he's going to get a huge contract, right? Like, you're talking about 7 years, $70 million as a ceiling, right? Like, I don't know, 7 years, $63 to $70 million. Like, you're talking about a large commitment that I think the Jets are ready to make. But to me, it's about less than just the contract. You're talking about a guy who's in the prime of his career. Like, this is a guy who I think has a 50 goal season in him, maybe a 55 goal season. And to me, he's also coming off, and not just me, I think a lot of people would agree that Laine is coming off of his best overall year.
No question.
In which his game took, you know, another step forward, right, Dave? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, his goal, obviously, like, his goal scoring is not as high as it was in his second year when he scored 44 goals, right? Mm-hmm. The year the Jets went to the West Final and he had 20 power play goals. Like, his numbers, his offensive numbers, I should say, took a little bit of a hit. But we know that because of the Jets losing those defensemen and the fact that the Jets had some systematic changes to their game, you know, Laine had to sacrifice a bit of offense, right? So, if you're trading a guy who's already got got, you know, 130 plus goals. I forget what the exact number is.
138.
Yeah, there you go. So the guy is the guy is probably going to, you know, hit 200, you know, within the next couple of years, right? Easily.
Yeah.
Right?
And
he has more goals at this stage in his career than Alex Ovechkin did.
Right.
Washington Capitals weren't trading Alex Ovechkin after 3 years
No.
or 4 years in the NHL.
But it goes back to what you said, Drew. When you're talking about a guy who's in, he just recently turned 22. Like, he's 22 and a half years old. April, his birthday's in April, right? Like, he's 22. His best years are still to come.
Could you imagine?
If you're going to trade Laine, like to me, if you're going to trade Laine for a package, that makes absolutely no sense. Right? Because you're never going to, you know, the old adage that, you know, whoever gets the best player wins the trade, right? Like,
right.
This isn't going to be a Joe Thornton trade, right? Like, where you have that package coming back from San Jose, right? Like, it would have to be a one-for-one
trade.
That
trade set back the Boston Bruins for how long?
Well, and you know, Pierre LeBrun, you know, in his column talked about, you know, Vincent Trocheck and Brett Pesce. To me, that makes
no sense.
Very little sense.
No sense. I read that, I'm like, you know, with all due respect to Vincent Trocheck and Brett Pesce, I'm reading this and saying, a reputable hockey journalist, you know, who you know, and a lot of these hockey, you know, the top flight hockey guys think that they could be general managers,
mm-hmm.
and are tied into general managers pretty well. If you are honestly saying that Patrick Laine is going to return you Vincent Trocheck and Brett Pesce,
I know.
It's embarrassing.
Don't be a GM.
Don't be a GM. I mean, that's not a return for a guy who is one of the elite goal scorers in the NHL.
Let's put it this way. You put Patrick Laine with Mark Scheifele for a season, what do you think his numbers are going to look like?
They're going to look great. And sure, and I'm...
I mean, if you're Patrick Laine, I mean, you're sitting there going, well, wait a second, like, put me with a number one center and look what I'll do.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that, you know, it's one of those aspects of his, people are like, oh, well, his goal scoring, well, I mean, who do you have? You had Andrew Kopp as the center.
His goal scoring.
For how many games this season?
Yeah, his goal scoring might have been down, but he was almost a point a game for the first time. For a lot of the season, he was a point a game
mm-hmm.
player.
Mm-hmm.
His passing skills have improved tremendously. His all around game has improved tremendously. So now you're going to trade him?
I mean, again.
But why?
Drew, he's a top five goal. In my opinion, he's a top five goal scorer in the league.
All these guys who are now writing about this and how this is, you know, how it's a possibility, answer me. I want one of them to give me an answer as to why. And don't say, well, because the Jets need to fill a hole at second line center.
To create another hole.
To create another hole
as
a superstar goal scorer.
Drew, the only reason is, and again, going back to what we talked about earlier, the only reason you're even considering moving him is if you don't think you can sign him long term.
That's it.
That's the only reason.
That's right. If his management team, if his agent has indicated to you that he's not going to sign here, you know, long term, that's the only consideration why you would move him. That is it. That is the grand total of the whole thing. Everything else
is not because of the player. It's not because of on ice performance.
No, everything else is nonsense speculation from people who should know better. And I understand why they write it. I do get it, because they need to fill their column inches
something. Think about how much airtime.
Of course.
That is created in Winnipeg.
It created the sausage. This is how the sausage got created. Somebody writes a trade bait board. Somebody else writes an article in The Athletic.
I just got hungry for a sausage.
It fuels talk radio.
Do you have any sausage?
I don't have any sausage. It fuels talk radio, and we're just as guilty of feeding the beast as anybody else.
Well, we have to talk about it.
I was going
to
say, it's been in the news all week. You have to address it.
Yeah.
I just think that none of us actually believe that. You know, sometimes you're fishing, you just put out a little bait, and you're like, okay, we'll see what comes of it. And the reality is, you can put something out there, it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to do it.
Well, where do you think Pierre LeBrun gets the names of Vincent Trocheck and Brett Pesce?
Cap friendly.
No. That's clever, is he? Gets them
Hockey
from
DB?
He gets them from Don Waddell.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, Don Waddell is like, oh, I see Patrick Laine. Well, sure, I'd love to play Patrick Laine with Sebastian Aho.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody would.
They tore up the World Juniors and the World Hockey Championship. I agree, though. Like, to me, Vincent Trocheck's a guy that can for sure get you 20 to 25 goals, 50 to 60. Like, he had a 75-point season. I don't think that's going to happen again, unfortunately. He's a good player. But again, you're talking about a second-line center.
Yeah.
And you're talking about a top four defenseman, a top pairing guy, but the sum of those parts are not Patrick Laine.
Especially Patrick Laine, who's still developing. I mean, Patrick Laine, when he's a year or two older from now, and he's 6'5", and he's 230 pounds.
Isn't that what he is now?
Well, he's 6'5", but I mean, according to, you know, Cap Friendly, his weight is...
He's going
to
eat some spinach.
He's going to develop even more, and nobody's going to be able to get the puck off of him. It's utter insanity that you would be talking about trading him for any reason other than he made that speculation that he would not want to sign here long term, which is not speculation.
All right.
We believe it.
Andrew, I could listen to a conversation. Like, if you want to say, would you trade Patrick Laine straight up for Miro Heiskanen or Cale Makar straight up? I might say, yeah. I don't know. Like, I mean, I would, but something like that, right? Like, or you said earlier, like a Jack Eichel or a Nathan MacKinnon.
Superstar for superstar.
That's what I'm saying. I would have that conversation, but that's all it would be, because I don't think that type of trade, like the Seth, I used this a couple of weeks ago, the Seth Jones for Ryan Johansson trade, when you have like a really good, like, future number one defenseman. I've said this before. I think Seth Jones is the best defenseman in the league. He's at the very least top five.
Right.
That's just me speaking.
Yeah.
But Ryan Johansson is a first line center. Like, the Johansson for Jones trades are so rare. Like, the Taylor Hall for Adam Larson, it's so laughable that Larson isn't even a top four defenseman really anymore. But those types of trades, Hall for Larson,
yeah,
Jones for Johansson, those types of trades rarely happen. So if those types of trades rarely happen, and then to me, like, talking about a Laine is going up a notch.
Yeah.
Right?
Where you would need a surefire number one center,
yes,
in return.
Yeah. Or a top five defenseman.
Top five in the league defenseman.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
That's right. You're not trading, right, a guy who's a superstar goal scorer for you know, a couple of second line draft.
Couple of magic beans.
Yeah, you know, a second pairing defenseman and a second line center.
Look.
Sorry, Dave, last word.
No, I was just going to say, folks in Winnipeg who have long memories will remember this. 51, 52, 47, 33. Those are the goal totals Timo Solani had right after he got traded away from Winnipeg.
Yeah.
And honestly, you can't help but find a parallel with, I'm not saying that Patrick Laine is Timo Solani, but, you know, he's a pretty good goal scorer. Yeah. And I think that folks here are going to be like, like you said, unless you somehow pry away an Eichel.
That's it.
Because
that's the name on my list.
Yeah, no, and that's a fair name. But, like, again, I just don't see it happening anyway. So the reality is, you're sitting there going, what are you going to do? You're going to lose that trade. And we know Kevin Cheveleyoff. He's not exactly one who's making tons of player trades anyways. I just don't see him making that trade.
I think it's complete insanity.
But it was a good topic of conversation.
But it gave us a segment, so I'm okay with that. When we come back, though, we will talk about Kevin Cheveldayoff. And, you know, does he need to maybe be more aggressive this offseason in how he explores getting that second-line center, or how he explores getting that top-four defenseman? Is it time for Chevy to bare his claws in his efforts to fill out that Jets roster? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
It seems to me, and based on how I watch Patrick Laine, he's happiest when he's playing beside Mark Scheifele, and less happy when he's not playing with Mark Scheifele.
So
and,
would I be.
You know, that also, yeah, I know. Yeah,
I get it.
But, you know, when you're paying $9+ million for any player, in this case a winger, he's got to be can't miss, and he's got to be exactly what you need. And I think Winnipeg has other more pressing needs.
That's TSN Hockey Insider Darren Dreger earlier this week on TSN 1050 in Toronto, talking more about the Laine rumors, talking more about the Ehlers discussion and things of that nature. And I personally would also be happier playing with Mark Scheifele as my number one center than the big question mark that the Jets have at the number two center spot, especially this past season with the absence of Brian Little from the Jets lineup more often than not. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the program brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. They're selling my condo, so if you want to sleep in the same room that I once slept in,
oh boy,
contact Frank and Mauro Zappia, and they'll give you all the information. That probably
it's a nice
is,
condo.
It is a nice condo. I'm not sure if that's a selling feature for
that's
anybody, though.
Most definitely not.
Not a selling feature for you,
no,
Dave?
No.
Not the same bed. I took the bed away. It's just a whole new, it's, you know, the same room.
It's in the Hugh Hefner.
Yeah.
I kind of miss those days.
The grotto. I've been trying to put a grotto in, but it's against the condo board rules.
We were a couple blocks away there in Osborne Village.
Yeah, no, you. I don't think you ever lived in the village at the same time I did. I think it was part of my agreement.
No, we did.
I prefer not to think about it, to be perfectly honest. You're still a little too close to me right now, even in this room and in general.
I miss living in the village. That has that great Safeway there. I used to go to that Safeway all the time.
Yeah, I mean, it was fun living in the village. Yeah. That's very true.
Lots of characters.
Yeah, I'm looking at one right in front of me.
I'm pretty sure back in the day, Richard and I picked up a character walking through Osborne Village. And he's right across from me right now.
The irony, though,
he didn't live in Osborne Village.
That's true. He was walking back from downtown to River Heights.
And what was the temperature?
Like minus 100.
And did he have gloves on?
He did not.
And
I don't think I had shoes on.
I'm pretty sure we had to push him into the vehicle because he refused to get in. We're like, Ezzy, get in the car. He's like, I'm fine. We're like, no, you're not.
And it was just a coincidence.
Had a couple pops
him.
That night, right?
Oh, yeah. No, it was happenstance. Like, literally, like, Rich is like, is that Ezzy? I was like, I think it is, actually.
And there's your escapade for this Saturday morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Every week we'll go back in time before Ezzy was responsible for the, you know, two children and talk about when he was a more fun human being and we had good stories as a result. And there you go. Anyways, let's get back to talking about the number two center spot for the Jets and the quest for a top four defenseman. You know, we know that the salary cap in the NHL is going to be flat for the next couple years. And the Jets are in a position this offseason where they have some salary cap space. The contracts of Kulikov coming off the books, the contract of Dustin Byfuglien being terminated. Does Kevin Cheveldayoff and our buddy Scott Billick, writing for the Winnipeg Sun when he wasn't on the COVID beat, opine this, that this is the offseason where Kevin Cheveldayoff needs to be a little more vicious and he needs to be a little bit more predatorial in how he deals with potential UFAs, how he has to deal with potential RFAs, and maybe offer sheet a player, and really sort of be a scavenger and pick the bones of teams that are in salary cap difficulty. Is that something that Kevin Cheveldayoff needs to sort of take a more aggressive tact this offseason?
Yeah, it's a really good question because I think we'd all agree that Chevy is going to have to be aggressive this summer. I think, like, we've talked about this now for, you know, at least a couple of months, right? With getting a second line center, getting a top four defenseman, you know, whether that's, you know, someone to play on the top pair with Josh Morrissey, if that's not going to be Dylan DeMello or getting a second pair left shot defenseman, right? But, you know, and Anthony Cirelli is an interesting player because he's arguably, you know, the biggest bargain in the NHL, right? Like, he's making just above, you know, league minimum, right? Like just above $700,000. You know, he's been playing second line center, right, with Stamkos out, right? So, like, you've got such an interesting player there. And, you know, I was thinking about that, and I think, Dave, you would have to offer Cirelli so much money in order for Tampa Bay not to match.
Right. Right? You don't want to have a repeat of the Aho and Montreal situation.
Exactly, right? Or Ryan O'Reilly, because Cirelli's a center, is the player that I thought of, even though I would argue that Cirelli doesn't have, you know, as high of a ceiling as O'Reilly. Like, to me, Cirelli is a perfect second-line center, right? Like, and we should mention, up until this point in his career, he's been a third-line center with Tampa Bay, right?
Right.
So he absolutely can be a second-line center for the Jets. But again, what are you going to offer him, right? Like, I'm not sure. I haven't crunched the numbers. Like, is he, would you sign him to a bridge contract? Probably not. You would want to sign him to a cap hit that's so high that, like I just said, that Tampa Bay won't match that, right? So
Tampa Bay has $5 million in cap space for next season. They only have 15 players on their roster. They have three defensemen under contract for next year. So that's why we're talking about Cirelli. He's a pending RFA, and Tampa Bay is one of those teams that is going to be in serious cap trouble this coming offseason.
Yeah, but we should mention that one of those guys is Kevin Shattenkirk, Zach Bogosian, Luke Shen. Like, all those guys are probably not coming back.
It's not their big dogs.
It's not their big dogs. Right. But
Hedman's under contract. Ryan McDonough's under contract.
But they only have
Eric Cernak is the guy that they have to sign, and he'll probably make, you know, I don't know what he'll make. He'll make a lot more than he's making now.
But they only have $5 million of cap space right now, and they have eight guys that they have to fill out the roster with.
Right, and that's why Scotty brought up Anthony Cirelli, because he's a guy that, you know, maybe Tampa Bay thinks that they're not going to be able to afford. All I'm saying is, if you're going to offer sheet him, and we should also mention the Jets have never offer sheeted anybody.
That's why we're saying, is this the year where Kevin Cheveldayoff has to be a little, you know, meaner than his reputation is, or a little more aggressive, because nobody would accuse Kevin Cheveldayoff of being aggressive in his activities as a general manager for the Jets. And he's definitely, you know, whatever you want to say about that, pro or con, I mean, he's definitely on the more cautious side. Mm-hmm. So is this the off season where he needs to maybe, have the tiger change his stripes a little bit, or find those players on cap ravaged teams and go aggressively after them? And, you know, sure, it maybe damages your relationship with the other general manager, but your job is to improve the Winnipeg Jets, and that your job is to, you know, is to build a winner in Winnipeg, no matter what it does to your relationship in another city.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And I think that, you know, you're not in this business to, I don't know who said that, but I like the line. It's like, you're not in this business to make friends. You're in this business to hang banners. I think that was the end of Scotty's article, actually, in the Sun. And he's not wrong. Like, I mean, Kevin Shoveldayoff isn't here to show everybody he's a really great guy. I mean, he's here in Winnipeg to build the Winnipeg Jets a Stanley Cup champion, or as to make the Jets put the Jets in a position to become Stanley Cup champions, I should say. So you have to do everything in your power. And again, it's funny because the Canucks, who are a really good young team, and as he was talking about them on Twitter last night, and, you know, we saw, look, they went to Game 7 against Vegas. Great series. We'll talk about that later. But the point is, what I found ironic was people were already talking about the Canucks window closing. And as he made a good point before we started the show, when I was kind of complaining about that, was, you know, this is a team that's window is really just opening. They've got so many good young players. So how can you, and that's my problem with a lot of the noise that we hear, is that everybody's already talking about the Jets window. Oh, it's already closed. You missed your opportunity. Now, don't get me wrong. You know, what happened with their defense isn't something a lot of teams have to deal with, especially as you're trying to rise up. But the reality is the Jets still have a ton of good pieces and an all-world goaltender in Connor Hellebuyck. So the fact is that you've still got an opportunity here for a number of years with this core to build something. My point is, now's the time for Kevin Shoveldayoff, and we talked about it last week. You don't have those big deals. You don't have Patrick Laine, you don't have Cal Connor, you don't have that uncertainty of those guys. The RFAs that the Jets have to sign this year, you know, the class of 2015.
Yeah, it's not costing you a ton of money.
Not costing you a ton of money, and you're going to get them all done. So the fact is, you have to be aggressive because you cannot afford to have a team who has the same issues as they dealt with this year next year.
And I'll just say this quickly about Tampa Bay, right? Like, you know, Anthony Cirelli is a guy who obviously is, you know, coming off of a breakout season. He's having a great playoffs for the Lightning, but we don't know if Julien Brisebois is considering moving a guy like Tyler Johnson or Yanni Gourde to make the cap space to sign Cirelli. So we, again, it goes back to what we said before. Cirelli might not even be in play. Right? Mm-hmm. Cirelli has to sign the offer sheet. That's all I'm saying. And I'm not picking on Scotty Billick, because I think what he's trying to do here is he's trying to make a point. It's not just Anthony Cirelli. It could be another player on another team, right? Mm-hmm. But the point is, getting back to what you asked off the top of the segment, Drew, is that, you know, Chevy might have to get a little bit more aggressive, a little bit more creative, and he might have to address 2C, or he might have to address that top pairing defenseman in ways other than free agency, right? It might have to be through an offer sheet or, you know, a trade that's involving, you know, a combination of draft picks and prospects. And mm-hmm. It very well could. It's going to be a very interesting offseason, which instead of being in July, it's going to be in October, because you're going to have all of these teams who thought they were going to have more cap space, and they don't.
That's exactly right, and that's why Kevin Shoveldayoff, and I think that's why people are looking at him to be aggressive in this situation. A lot of feedback, a lot of comments coming in via our Twitter feed at Illegal Curve. Some great comments coming in via text as well. 1290 90. We want to hear from you. We want to hear from you about the possibility of Laine and or Ehlers being traded, even though we've poured cold water on that already this morning. We want to hear from you about Kevin Shoveldayoff and his actions in getting that Jets number two center or a top four defenseman. Much more to come. Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio, 1290. Drew Mindell, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you. We want to hear from you. You can send us your tweets at Illegal Curve. We're talking about the Winnipeg Jets. You can send us your text, 1290 90. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
the original bubble boy, Mike McIntyre, joins us on the program. Mike, how are you? Nice to hear from you.
I am doing very well, guys. Morning. Happy long weekend.
Yes, likewise to you as well, Mike, and we appreciate you giving up time on your long weekend to join us. Mike, obviously, we want to talk about the Winnipeg Jets to start and the news of the week, which, you know, got tongues a-wagging regarding the potential of Patrick Laine and or Nikolaj Ehlers to be on the trade market. We've sort of poured cold water on that idea so far this morning. So from your perspective, is this a case of where there's smoke, there's fire, or is this a case of it's more much ado about nothing than anything else?
Yeah, I'd lean towards much ado about nothing, guys. I mean, I think the Jets would be wise to at least listen to what might be out there. I think as a GM, you wouldn't be doing your job if you didn't at least entertain the notion of what certain moves could do to your team, especially when you're a team that needs to fill some holes on your roster. And there's no question Kevin Cheveldayoff has his work cut out for him this offseason in addressing some of the holes. And what's one of the more traditional ways of filling a hole on a roster? Well, you maybe move from a position of strength to fill a position of weakness. So, you know, when you look at the Jets roster, where do they have the most depth right now? It would, in my opinion, and I think most would agree, would be when you're looking at young wingers, right? And so Patrick Laine, Nikolaj Ehlers, and I'd throw Kyle Connor into there as well. They fit into that definition of, I don't want to say a surplus, but it's where the team has the most depth. So if you're looking to build up the middle by bringing in a top centerman, or if you're looking for a top two defenseman, I can see why a name like Patrick Laine would be out there. But I still go back to the fact that Kevin Cheveldayoff would have to have his doors absolutely blown off with an offer to make a trade like that, because especially when you're talking Laine, given what he's already accomplished at a very young age, I mean, that has the potential to coming back, not just to bite you, but to haunt you for years to come. You know, there's a good chance that you may be dealing the best player in that trade, regardless of what you get back. And I've never been a big fan of the whole cheaper by the dozen concept. You know, you move out one to get two or three back and think that collectively they make you a better team. It seems like those deals often don't work out.
You know, Mike, sticking with what you were just talking about with the holes to fill, and we all know, you know, those holes are 2C and, you know, a top right side defenseman. That is, of course, if Dylan DeMello isn't re-signed, because I think you'd agree that he could probably fill that role. But the point is, you know, it's either a left shot or a right shot defenseman that you can put in there in your top four, and then, you know, maybe also throw in a fourth line winger. But just for the purposes of this question, you know, what do you think is easier to acquire? Because in my opinion, and obviously we're talking about trades here, for me, it's much easier to acquire a defenseman than that is a second-line center, because when you're talking about acquiring a bona fide second-line center, you're probably either going to have to give up a first-round draft pick or you're going to have to give up a prospect that has high upside.
Yeah, I would agree, Eddie. I mean, not that the defensemen are, you know, top defensemen are growing on trees out there, but I do think that is a position where, you know, you can strike a little more. You know, you carry six. Every team has at least in their eyes, six quality NHL defensemen. Every team does not have, in their eyes, six quality NHL centermen. A lot of teams might only have two or three, right? And so you're a lot more reluctant sometimes to part and part with one. And when you do have good ones, you do everything possible to hold on to them. And I think we're also seeing, guys, you look around the league, you know, trying to map out, you know, what makes teams successful, especially in the playoffs. Yes, a solid blue line is important, as is obviously a quality goaltender, and the Jets have that. But it's depth up the middle, and the teams that seem to be still playing hockey right now, you look up and down their lineup, and they are rock solid up the middle. I look at a team like the New York Islanders, for example, right? I mean, look what they have with Barzal, Nelson, and Jean-Gabriel Pageau as your third-line center. He might be the best third-line center in the league. you try and build up the middle. And we know here in Winnipeg, that's been a constant source of concern and you know, focus for basically 3 years now, going back to even when Brian Little was 3 years younger and they were still trying to replace him in that 2C hole. Paul Stastny, obviously, Kevin Hayes, Cody Eakin, and Little was injured this year. But in my eyes, that search has to come to an end this off season. You cannot go into next season still wondering, you know, who's going to be your second line center, especially with Brian Little's status, you know, a big question mark in my eyes.
So, Mike, at the virtual draft in Montreal, the Jets have a first-round pick, a second-round pick, a fifth-round pick, and a sixth-round pick. Do you think that they'll be making all of those selections, or do you see them being active in the trading one of those guys or one of those picks?
Well, you do wonder. I mean, I don't think the Jets deal the 10th overall pick because they're going to get a heck of a player, a heck of a prospect for sure, you know, at that pick, given how deep this draft is. But again, when you're talking about, you know, potential trade alternatives, so let's say you decide you don't want to trade one of Line A, Ehlers, or Connor. You want to hang on to all those guys, and I certainly wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't criticize a decision like that. Those are players that make your team better right now. If the Jets are trying to quickly retool here, you know, not rebuild, they're not rebuilding. They're trying to retool and reload. That 10th overall pick's going to probably turn out to be a pretty good player in a few years from now. That's not someone who's stepping into your lineup, you know, in December, whenever the next season starts, and making an impact. So could that pick potentially be in play instead of a Line A, Ehlers, or Connor? And I'm not saying it would carry the same trade value, but perhaps, you know, you package it up with something. Obviously, a name like Jack Rossovic, I think, has been out there for quite some time. I wonder, guys, if someone like Sammy Niku could still be, you know, have some real significant value for another team. You look at the Jets and the makeup of their blue line. You know, is there room for a Sammy Niku going forward, especially with, like, Ville Heinola now emerging? I don't know that you don't want to construct a blue line that is all kind of similar type players, right? So is Ville Heinola kind of past Sammy Niku on that chart? The Jets already have Josh Morrissey, Neil Pionk, you know, guys with a lot of offensive upside, but that aren't the biggest bodies. And that's something I think the Jets need to address. So you wonder, like, Rossovic, Niku, a 10th overall pick, like, what could that potentially bring you if you were to package it together? That being said, Dave, I do think we see the Jets make their picks, in lieu of perhaps trades at this point. I think that, you know, you look at the depth of the Moose, and I know you're going to be talking with Pascal Vincent. Sure, there's some good pieces there still in the system, but the pipeline isn't nearly as deep as it was a couple of years ago. And that's not to criticize the organization. That's because so many of the promising young players are now with the big club. So I think you need to always have at least one eye on the future, right? And so I would expect the Jets, especially in that 10 spot, to very likely keep that pick.
Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. You know, Mike, all the talk, of course, is on that second line center and on, you know, the top four defensemen. You know, justifiably so, of course. But, you know, to me, I look at this Jets roster and I think that almost now more than ever, the Jets fourth line, which has always been, you know, it's just been a bit of a mishmash of players and, you know, waiver pickups and depth
right.
guys on one-year deals, you know, just a you know, real, you know, a dog's breakfast in some respects over the last number of years. I think finding an identity for that fourth line would be tremendously helpful to the organization and tremendously helpful for Paul Maurice having trust in sending out that fourth line. Should that be maybe not a top priority, but maybe a secondary priority for Kevin Cheveldayoff this offseason?
Well, and it's a great point because you look at a team like the Vegas Golden Knights, right, and how they, you know, wore down Vancouver. Obviously, they only won that series by the skin of their teeth, but it's not because they're barely the better team. Vegas is hands down a bigger, better, deeper team than Vancouver. And a big part of that is their ability, you know, to wear them down. You look at the Canucks last night, they had nothing in the tank, like absolutely nothing. And it felt like it was just a matter of time. And eventually, obviously, the cream did rise to the top. But a big part of that is look at the way Pete DeBoer uses his fourth line. Like, I think I saw a graphic after the first period, the fourth line, you know, and it was causing Vancouver to have to play their fourth line a lot as well, just to try and match and, you know, to have the fresh legs, right? So Vegas, a team like Vegas and even a team like the Islanders, and really you could go around, you know, the teams that are still playing hockey right now, they do have a fourth line that I would suggest has a lot more of an identity and that you can play, you know, 10 minutes a game and have confidence in. The Jets certainly didn't have that luxury at various times this past season. Big part of that was injuries. I mean, Matthew Perreault was on your fourth line at one point this year, which probably gives you a little more leeway to play them a bit more. But you're right. I mean, when you had, you know, Logan Shaw, and you look at some of the guys that were rotating in and out of there from, you know, Chibasov, Luoto, you know, the list goes on. The Jets never really had a set fourth line. I don't know that you can make that a top priority. I think that's more a product of when you get your roster set the way you'd like, especially your top nine. The trickle down is that you would hopefully have a respectable fourth line that you can trust and count on. And, you know, I go back to something that I've said for a while with the Jets. Like, in my eyes, guys, a sign that the Jets will really have meaningful depth is the day that Adam Lowry is your fourth line center. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that he always has to be used in that sense, but if the Jets were to ever get so deep that you could plunk Lowry on your fourth line and, again, play them 10 minutes a game at 5-on-5, plus, you know, Lowry would obviously be part of the penalty kill. To me, that's a sign that you've got the kind of depth you need to win a Stanley Cup.
Mike, last question for you here. You mentioned Vegas earlier, and we should mention that you're going to be going back to Edmonton to re-enter the bubble and cover the Stanley Cup final for the Winnipeg Free Press. And I know that you like Vegas and Tampa Bay. That was your Stanley Cup prediction prior to the playoffs starting. Is there anything that's happened in the second round that's changed your mind? Do you think there's a chance that, you know, Dallas might upset Vegas, or either the Islanders or the Flyers might upset Tampa Bay? Or what you saw in the second round just confirming your earlier Stanley Cup prediction of Vegas and Tampa Bay?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't always easy to get there, right? Vegas certainly had its challenges. Tampa, I think, you know, relatively easily disposed of a shorthanded Boston club. But no, other than, I guess, Barry Trotz is a wizard with the New York Islanders. And my goodness, you know, he has the ability, obviously, through his coaching to find ways to shut teams down. Now, I don't know that the Islanders are even going to get by the Flyers tonight. It would seem like Philly has all the momentum after two straight elimination wins. But I think if it's the Islanders, I think they'd give Tampa a lot more trouble than I expect Philadelphia will. And, you know, Dallas is a nice story for sure, but I think Vegas is just so deep. I think they probably will come out of this Vancouver series, you know, maybe learning a few lessons as well. And I expect them to get back to the Cup. So, no, I still think we're going to see Vegas-Tampa. And, you know, I was probably more inclined to pick Tampa when the playoffs started, but they're banged up, right? I mean, from obviously Stamkos is still not with them. We don't know Kucherov's status. I mean, that would be a huge loss if Nikita Kucherov is out for any period of time. So I'm going to suggest that this is the Vegas Golden Knights Cup to lose now at this point.
Mike McIntyre covers the Winnipeg Jets in the NHL for the Winnipeg Free Press. He's going to go back to Edmonton for the Stanley Cup Final. Mike, before we let you go, I think I can speak on behalf of Ezzy and Dave as well. We want to extend you kudos. You wrote about this in your Winnipeg Free Press newsletter that gets mailed out. But if I'm reading this correctly, since June 1st, you've lost almost 50 pounds through a steady workout and diet regimen.
That a boy, Mike.
And a couple guys here who could afford to lose a little LBs, yeah. We want to pay tribute to you there, yeah. And say that's a great job and keep it up. And kudos to you for being so diligent and accomplishing that terrific goal.
Thank you, friends. I appreciate it. And just know that when we do get back to Bell MTS, whenever that is, That just means more candy in the candy line for you guys, because I'll be taking a pass.
Yeah, I'll take more jujubes, Mike.
Yeah, perfect. We'll be glad to take you up on that offer, Mike. And it'll be like, we'll make sure that you don't get too close to the candy, like Kramer and the lobster in that episode of Seinfeld.
Great episode.
Mike,
sure.
Thank you. Have a great long weekend, buddy.
Take care.
Take care, Mike. When we come back, we'll talk about the Jets expansion draft and who the forwards that they're likely going to protect are. Much more to come. And Pascal Vincent, head coach of the Manitoba Moose, coming up at the top of the hour. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
For Roslovic, right side for Tucker Pulmish. Back for Roslovic. Scores! After it is Andrew Kopp. Plays it for Roslovic for Harkins. Harkins scores! Jansen Harkins has his first National Hockey League goal.
Well, right now, Ryan Reeves trying to face off against Lowry. Adam Lowry's pretty honest player, plays hard.
Here they go. Reeves trying to get the right loose. So is Lowry. And that's it. LeBeau in with a bump. On the loose puck is Patan. Patan back door. Score! Mason Appleton has his first NHL goal.
A mashup of goals by Adam Lowry, Jack Roslovic, Jansen Harkins, and Mason Appleton. Kudos to producer Sean Assor back at the studio for putting that together. Those four players are among the topics of discussion as it pertains to the forwards of the Winnipeg Jets will be protecting for the upcoming expansion draft. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the program brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. So as it comes to the expansion draft, this is the draft, of course, that'll bring the Seattle Kraken into the NHL. We more or less know guaranteed who five of the Jets forwards are going to be that they're going to protect. And we're pretty safe in assuming that the Jets are going to go with the seven forwards, three defensemen, one goaltender method of protection. Things could change, of course, depending on what happens this offseason and throughout the course of the year. But for conversation's sake, let's say they're going to protect seven forwards. Wheeler, Scheifele, Connor, Ehlers, Laine. No question on those five. I think it's the next two that create a lot of discussion. You know, is Andrew Kopp going to be the sixth forward that's going to be protected? And then of Lowry and Roslovic, who are the Jets more likely to protect as the seventh forward? What about strong seasons from Mason Appleton or Jansen Harkins? Could they end up being protected? If Brian Little comes back and he has a strong year, could he be one of the sixth forward or the seventh forward protected by the Jets? How do you guys see the forwards play out as it relates to the expansion draft about a year from now that's going to bring in the Seattle NHL franchise?
Yeah, I'll jump in there. I've said this on the record before on the show, on social media. I know Dave M will love this. I'm protecting Jansen Harkins. He's one of my two forwards there. You know, I think there's definitely value and a reason to protect Jack Roslovic. Well, I should say the other forward's Andrew Kopp for me.
So you have Kopp as, say, your sixth forward, and Harkins Jansen is your Harkins, seventh forward.
And for me, it's the flexibility, guys, right? Like, I mean, Jansen Harkins, I think he surpassed our expectations of what he did after he was called up by the Jets, right? And a lot of that had to do with the injuries, right? We thought he was going to spend the entire year in the American Hockey League, but Jansen Harkins has graduated. Like, he's too good for the AHL now, right? And, you know, we're going to have Pascal on next, and he would tell you the exact same thing. He deserves a lot of credit for, you know, Jansen's development in the American Hockey League. But for me, I protect Harkins because I think he has a higher upside than Adam Lowry. And when you're talking about, I think he has a higher upside than Jack Roslovic, and people might disagree with that. But to me, Roslovic is a guy that he's been given some opportunities in the top six and he hasn't done enough. So again, I'm not saying that Roslovic isn't a great player, but I'm just saying for me, I would put Harkins ahead of Roslovic. And then when you're talking about Kopp, I think he's ideally suited probably for a third line role, whether that's center or wing, but he can play second line center. He can even play on your top line if you need him. So for me, I'm keeping Kopp all day long. I don't think you can expose him. you know, he's going to get a little bit of a raise. He's got 1 year left on his contract, but I think he's a guy that you definitely want to sign long term. I don't think you'd give him a 6 year deal, but I would have no problem giving him a 3 or 4 year deal.
I think Andrew Kopp, to me, Dave, is the big wild card there because, like you said, Ezzie, he's got next year he's under contract, then he's an RFA for one more year, and then he would be eligible for unrestricted free agency. So you should have an idea before the expansion draft, if Andrew Kopp wants to be here long term, if he wants to be a member of this organization and make a 3, 4, 5 year commitment that would then, you know, almost quote unquote require you to hold on to him as part of the protected list for the expansion draft.
Yeah, no, absolutely, Drew. And it's interesting. I'd be curious to go back to what we were talking about in advance of the Vegas one.
Sure.
Not the summer, obviously, not before it happened, but obviously the year before it happened, because that's what happens. Obviously, the speculation starts to snowball about a year before the draft, you know, the expansion draft. People start to wonder, okay, well, what players are going to be selected, or what options are you going to have? So there's a lot of factors, right? I mean, to your point, if you don't have Andrew Kopp for a long term, you're much more likely to say, okay, well, we're obviously not going to protect someone who we're not going to be able to get something done with. So if you can't get something done with him, it's all well and good that you want to keep him because he fits on your team, but if he doesn't fit on your team, you're not going to keep him.
Well, you don't want to end up losing a guy in the expansion draft.
You don't want to lose Jansen Harkins and then also lose Andrew Kopp.
That's
anyways.
Right. Because you know you're going to lose one guy, a good player, be it, you know, Adam Lowry, be it Mason Appleton, be
and you
it,
know what?
You know, whomever it ends up being, or the Jets make a trade so that, you know, the Kraken select, you know, the 2021 version of Chris Thorburn instead of,
sure.
of one of the defensemen or forwards.
And the truth is, we'll also see about, it's all about opportunity, right? Like if the Jets go with a class of 2015 line next season and those guys explode.
Yeah.
Well, it changes the way, like, I'm just saying, like, you know, with Harkins, it's all about opportunity. We see it in the AHL all the time. A guy's on the, Mason Appleton too. He was starting the year in the fourth line with the Moose's first season. He got opportunity. He forced his way to get that opportunity. And eventually he's on the first line and then he's called up to the Jets. My point is that as guys get opportunities, you know, they can start to do some things to change your mind. Jack Roslovic maybe gets an opportunity. He maybe starts to change your mind. Jansen Harkins, a lot of people obviously weren't paying attention to him. He's got a lot of people paying attention now. So I'm just saying that it's hard to predict because within that year, so many things can happen that will change your mind.
And just quickly, when I said Harkins, upside, I didn't necessarily mean offensive upside. Like, to me, Harkins is such a good two-way center, right? Like, he can play on the wing as well, but that's what I meant. I mean, for me, I think, you know, he can be that kind of jack-of-all-trades type of player. I just really like him and what he's done in the American Hockey League and the NHL, so that's what I meant. But I do think that, you know, Chevy and the Jets management have a tough decision there because both of those guys were drafted the same year. They're both really good players, so it's not an easy decision to make.
It'll be something, obviously, to keep an eye on throughout the 2020-2021 season, whenever that does get underway. Who knows when that date is going to be. Who knows when the AHL season is going to get underway. It's probably going to be in line with the NHL. They got a date right now, but who knows if that date's going to move depending on circumstances out of our control. Up next, we'll speak with Manitoba Moose head coach Pascal Vincent. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290 alongside Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. I'm your host, Drew Mindell. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. We want to hear from you. You can reach us via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Speaking of the Manitoba Moose, we are pleased to welcome the head coach of the Moose, Pascal Vincent, back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Pascal, good morning. Thanks so much for joining us on the 5th of September. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me. I'm doing well, considering what's going on. I'm excited. My daughter is going back to school next week. They have a good plan, so I'm confident there. So things are as good as they could be.
That's good optimism. My daughter is, of course, going back to school next week as well, and I too am confident. So we'll bask in each other's confidences right now, Pascal. You know, it's obviously got to be such a unique situation, because really this would be the week that training camp would be gearing up, and you know the season would be, you know, very close to starting. You know, you'd be on the ice at the Iceplex and getting ready to put your troops through through their paces. But obviously, we know that that's not going to happen for the next couple of months. So, you know, how are you spending your time? How are you preparing for next season's Manitoba Moose season, whenever it does officially begin?
Well, right now it's a lot of watching hockey, watching as many games as I can, so we can not only watch them, but we record all of them, and you can go back and watch different systems, how teams are playing and the adjustments on the special teams, and the way that coaches manage their bench. So it's right now it's a study time. What we're doing right now is basically what we usually do when the playoffs are on, and we're just studying and looking at different things. So that's what we're doing, and preparing for next year as far as players. This is not my job. My job is to coach the players what I'm going to be given. So I just can't prepare myself as a coach, and that part of the year, which is now September, and usually it's in the best case scenario, you want to be playing in June until the end, and you want to win the last game of the season and the last game of the playoffs. But when you don't, there's ways to get better, and then you attend seminars and you talk to different coaches, you make some research, you read, and then that's what I'm doing right now.
Pascal, we want to ask you about some players on the Moose, of course, but I wanted to ask you about your experience in the bubble in Edmonton. Obviously, you know, it didn't go the way that you guys wanted it to go against the Flames, and a lot of that had to do with, you know, injuries to Mark Scheifele, Patrick Laine, Mason Appleton. But what was it like for yourself to be in the bubble? Obviously, you know, you've got a young family, as you mentioned earlier, but what was the whole experience like, you know, for you, obviously considering that, you know, the Jets didn't go as far as you wanted?
Right. So I have two lives. I have the family life, and I have, like everybody else, professional life, and this is such a unique situation. We all went to the bubble and not knowing exactly. We had meetings and conference calls with the league, with Gary Bettman, with the people of the league telling us and showing us what it's going to look like. But once but you didn't experience the whole thing, so you don't exactly know how it's going to work and how things are going to move and stuff. So going there, first of all, I thought the people here in Winnipeg, our trainers and our equipment people, did an amazing job at making sure we stay safe. We were being tested every day, they did a phenomenal job at that, keeping everything clean, and so that was a good thing. So you feel, you go there with a feeling that it's safe. Once we got there, it was really safe. There was no way to come in or come out of the bubble for anybody else but the people in the bubble. So it was very safe. The league did a great job at keeping us safe. But for coaches, it was like Christmas time, right? So you have three games a day. NHL games, you can go in and out of the building, sit in a box, and then watch as many games as you want. You come back, you work with your team, you work with your staff. You have one practice a day or a game, and then there's food. We had some kind of a lounge there that we had food available. It was a gym and a room where you didn't have to pack in and pack out and then, you know, travel in between games. You were staying in the same room. So for a hockey guy, it was Christmas time. Hockey, food, a gym, and you don't have to move from room to room or any traveling at all. So that was awesome in that regard, and we felt safe. But the other side of my life, obviously, when you're away from your family, it's always difficult. So But I enjoyed every single minute of it. Like you said, wish we would have stayed there. Wish we would still be there. Not the case. So we're going to work even, I don't want to say harder. I don't know if we can work really harder than what we've done, but we're going to do our best to get better.
Coach, one player you won't have next season to help your team getting better after spending seven seasons in the organization with the Jets and the Moose is J.C. LaPon. And maybe you could just speak to what he's meant to this organization after, you know, so many years, wore a letter for this team, and what he meant for you as a coach.
Well, he's such a special person. That's the one guy. So we have quite a few of those people. They really want to play for the Jets, and they eventually end up with the Jets, and then everything that comes with playing in the NHL. And we're talking about, you know, the caliber of the game, achieving your dream, playing in the NHL, and playing for the Jets. So for JC, it wasn't necessarily that case. He's been called up a few times. He wanted to be a Jet, and he had multiple opportunities over the year to sign somewhere else with different organizations, and he decided to stick with us because he wanted to be here in Winnipeg. He wanted to play for the Jets and do his best with the Moose, and he did. He was he got better. He came in as a guy that can, you know, play well on the PK and then bring some energy on the ice. Maybe, you know, play a tougher game when it's needed, going to the net and stuff like that. But he developed and he evolved over the years, and he was scoring goals and playing on the power play to a point where he became one of our captains and a real good influence in the room. Every year we have a test, so we bring some professionals and our players are getting tested, and then I'm not talking about physical testings, but more mental and social testings. And JC, every year, he's one of our top leaders as far as showing what it takes with actions to be a leader and what it takes to support each other and how he moves every day and how he practices and how he plays. So we're going to miss him a lot. But at some point, we got to, I think, to a point where JC needed to think for himself. And then I don't like to use the word selfish, but that was an opportunity for him to move forward and try something new and maybe make a little bit more money and think about his future. And I think it was the right time for him. I think it was the right decision, and I really hope he's going to be a success. I know he will be, but I wish him the best of luck because he's a good man, and he was a real good soldier for us.
Pascal Vincent is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Of course, you know that Pascal is the head coach of the Manitoba Moose. Pascal, I want to ask you about a player that maybe is a little bit, I don't want to say forgotten in the eyes of Jets fans as a prospect, but maybe not top of mind, and that's Christian Vesalainen. And he spent last season his first full year with the Moose, and he put up 30 points in 60 games. From the start of the season to when the season abruptly ended, how did you see his game, you know, transform or develop over the course of the year?
Right. So the people that would be disappointed, that's the angle I have right now listening to your question. The people that would be disappointed in Christian would be, the disappointment would be driven by some kind of an expectation from what you've heard and what you've probably thought about is next year or so. Christian is a young player, and he has great upsides to his game. He's a kid that, you know, went away from home at 16 years old to play in a adult league, a professional league. He had to learn on himself to cook and to do his laundry at a very young age. So there is a maturity about Christian that people are not necessarily aware, but that goes a long way. So there's part of him is he's a man in a day-to-day life, and then when you talk to him, what do you do before a game? What do you do after a game? Why did you didn't play that game? It wasn't right. What happened? Did you do something before? Did you do something during the game? What was your mental state? And he has the answers. He knows why. So there's a part of Christian's process where, as a hockey player, where he's very, very mature, but he's still a young man. And physically, he's a tall man. He's not necessarily the strongest yet, but we could see it over time. This year, he's getting stronger and stronger. And by the end of the year, he was on our top line and or playing the most minutes and with Gustafsson and Reichel. And that line was not only being interesting 5-on-5 and producing 5-on-5, and playing against the top lines, but there was some chemistry between the three of them. So it's a process. To evolve as a hockey player, it's not always like the guy next door, and it's you. Everybody has their own way and their own path. I felt Christian got stronger this year. He got physically more mature. I know the mental is right, so that's a good sign. Now it's up to him. The physical part, it's really easy. I don't want to say to fix, but to improve, because you're in control of that. Control the controllable, so he can control that. And that's something that it's going to be only up to him. How hard he's going to work in the gym, and while we don't play, and in season, off season, because the potential is there, and I have good hope. I think he's a very good person. He wants to learn. He wants to get better. He finished the season strong, so it's positive.
Pascal, we wanted to ask you about Michael Hutchinson because, of course, you coached Hutchinson with the Winnipeg Jets and the Manitoba Moose, and you know, I just wanted to really ask you what was going through your mind watching him. You know, he picked up the big wins in Game 5 and 6, obviously yesterday. You know, that was an unfortunate overtime goal, you know, that was scored, and the Avalanche weren't able to advance. But you know, what was that like for you as a former coach of Hutchinson to watch him, you know, as a third string goaltender and get in there for the Avalanche and pick up a couple wins?
Very happy for him. He's Hutch came to the Moose in a moment where he wasn't necessarily happy with the move. Same thing with Pavelec. It's kind of similar situation. We had Pav before, and then Hutch came down with the Moose and not happy, which I can understand. Obviously, everybody would. But he did it right, and he became really good, and he started to. We had a relationship with the Jets, but my job was more forwards and developing skills and stuff like that. So I wasn't really necessarily in contact or communicating a lot with Hutch. But as a head coach of the Moose, I had to, and we started. We created a relationship that is still ongoing. We played in Toronto when he was in Toronto with the Marlies, and then we had a chat, and then always happy to see him. So my point is for him to, I guess, what happened is helping him, or it's helping people remembering about, hey, this guy is pretty good, and he can play, so it's mainly. For that reason, I'm really happy for him because he's not being forgotten, and hopefully it's going to give him a chance to get back as a regular in the NHL. But I'm really happy for him. Hutch is a good man, and I wish him the best.
You know, Coach, the Jets have loaned out some of the players you could be having on your team next season, and David Gustafsson's going to be starting next year in Sweden. You've got Ville Heinola, and now Leon Gavanke just signed in Berlin. So we know those guys are going to be playing next, you know, whenever their seasons start overseas. But for the guys who aren't, you know, playing yet, what kind of regiment are they going to have in place to be ready to go when everything is, you know, starting again, potentially in December?
Well, it's really we're asking for our players to be accountable right now. If you can't play, you got to find a way to get better. And we're all different. I'm here in Winnipeg, and and trying to find a way to get better. If you're anywhere on the planet, you have to find a way to get better. And then we're asking them to be, like I said, staying positive, control the controllables, and trying to find a way to get better. And you know, there's if you do it right, and there's some ice sessions that are available pretty much everywhere, limited people, but you can go on the ice, you can work on your skills, you can go. Most of those guys have access to a gym where it can be very safe. Get in there and prepare yourself the best you can, and it's going to be up to them to make those efforts and to show how bad they want to play for the Moose and the Jets next year. And because everything right now is so different, we have to adjust. We can't expect to do what we usually do, because it's not an option. We have to adapt. We have to adjust. And the people that will have to are the people that did that, just adjusting and adapting to the situation. They will show up at camp and be in a better position to stick around. But we're right now. And it's going to be a good evaluation. I'm not changing the subject, but it's going to be a good evaluation for us as far as who really took the time to invest in themselves and show up at camp in the proper physical and mental condition.
Pascal Vincent is the head coach of the Manitoba Moose. Pascal, we appreciate your time and insight as always. Thanks so much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. All the best in the continued offseason, and hopefully we'll see you at the rink sooner rather than later.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Take care, Pascal. Thanks very much. When we come back, okay, we look at the Bodog.net scoreboard. We update you on the Game 7s from last night and much more to come. We want your comments. We want your feedback on Twitter and by text. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Pönttöä. Pakki pakki syy. Syvyyssuunnassa Sekerä juoksee maalin taakse. Kiviranta ja Hintsamat maalin edessä. Jaer Kiviranta! Hattu temppu täyteen! Jaer Kiviranta!
Everything sounds better in Finnish, especially a Game 7 overtime winner. That's the Finnish language call of Joel Kiviranta's OT winner last night, giving the Dallas Stars a 5-4 victory, sending them on to the Western Conference Final.
Can we just play that call for the rest of the show?
I mean, we could. I don't think anybody would object to it. I just want to listen to that over.
So
just,
good.
Just on loop. Just to keep going with that. You know, the passion, of course. Well,
especially for the guy who picked Dallas to
be in the Stanley Cup Finals.
Back in September.
You know what? You've been talking about that for
a while.
I
want a little credit.
You talk about it off air. You talk about it on air. You're Barry Horowitzing yourself there with clapping yourself on the back there, buddy boy.
Hey, come on. Dallas. How many people had Dallas?
They haven't done anything yet. They've got to the Western Conference
Just wait final. Till they upset Vegas.
Okay, fair enough. Dave Minuk is sticking with his boys, as you might expect. And, of course, in the other Game 7
I don't want
Pundit night,
Hawk to get me.
No, Pundit Hawk is he's keeping track of all those freezing cold takes on Twitter and going to throw them back in your face.
Exactly.
Yeah. But in the other Game 7 last night, it was just a dominant performance by two players, by the Vegas Golden Knights as a team, and then by Thatcher Demko in goal for Vancouver.
The shots were 15-3 halfway through the game.
Yeah. That's not very good for Vancouver.
No, the fact that Thatcher Demko almost, you know, went three periods with a shutout, right? Because Vegas scored with, 7 minutes left or 8 minutes left, something like that, right?
Yeah.
It was just incredible because, you know, you had played the previous night. So obviously, you know, Travis Green is going to go back with Demko, right? He's not going to go with Jake Ottinger, right? So
no, that was a no question about it.
Just one of the most incredible performances. It almost made you think back to, I don't know if you guys were thinking about this, but it made me think of J.S. Jaguar, right? When J.S. Jaguar was so dominant for the Anaheim Ducks,
yeah,
and they almost won the cup. My Devils won the cup that year.
Jaguar won the Conn Smythe though.
Well,
that year.
He did win the Conn Smythe, but you know, he would have taken the Stanley Cup ring. But the point was, I mean, he was lights out. He had a shutout streak that was well over 100 minutes. I forget exactly what it was, but Demko deserves so much credit because if you think about it, he single-handedly got them to Game 7.
Yeah, and single-handedly got them to the third period tied.
Yeah.
You know, with 7 minutes to go.
Some of those saves he made were incredible.
That should have been, I mean, it should have been, you know, 3-4, 5-0 for Vancouver, pardon me, for Vegas, because Vancouver had nothing in the tank.
Well, at one point, Demko was making saves on his back. Like, he was just making the most acrobatic saves. It's almost like he was saying, like, you know, technique be damned. I'm just going to stop pucks any way I can. And you could tell that he was tired. But more importantly for Vegas, the Canucks were tired. And, you know, Vegas took advantage of that because they were all over the Canucks all game. And it was just a matter of time. Shea Theodore obviously was the only guy that had the, you know, the solution to beat Thatcher Demko. But just an incredible series, really, because it looked like that series might be over in five.
That really did. It seemed like the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference finals were going to be quick, that they could have been already a couple games into those, as opposed to having yet another Game 7 later on tonight between the Flyers and the Islanders. The Flyers, again, also sort of playing a little rope-a-dope with the Islanders, given that they were badly outshot in Game 6, only to end up scoring the OT winner in double OT to send that game to Game 7 later on tonight. It's been certainly an interesting set of games. Anytime you can have three Game 7s, the hockey fans will certainly enjoy that. And the good news for the Dallas Stars, obviously, Joel Kivaranta with the goal last night. And then
although having the game start at 3 o'clock was a little inopportune for folks.
Yeah, their scheduling is so bizarre.
Like, that does make a lot of sense. Like, who wants to start a hockey game at 3 o'clock in the afternoon?
Like, I don't get why you can't start that. Like, yeah, we talked about the scheduling, you know, earlier last week. We were complaining about the Vancouver series starting at, you know, 9:30 on the, what was it, Sunday night at 9:30 or something?
Yeah.
Winnipeg time.
Yeah.
And then yesterday they started at 3 o'clock. I mean, you know,
it just doesn't make a lot of sense.
I don't think you could have started it that much later, though, guys, because, of course, both games were in Edmonton, and if you started at 5 or 6 and there's an overtime,
then you're in trouble a
little
bit.
That means that the second game can't start until 10 or whatever, right?
Valid point. I mean, that's fair.
I get it. I'm just saying, like, game 7 at 3 o'clock. Like,
I wasn't loving it, Dave. I was in the office, and then as soon as I got home, I had to, you know, look after the kids, right? So I'm kind of trying to sneak a little bit of a view here and there.
Let's be honest. The kids pretty much look after him, I think, is more likely what
happens.
At this
point, absolutely.
Yeah, the kids are more responsible for keeping you around than the other way around. In any event, some entertaining Game 7s, another one to come later on this evening. We'll talk about, when we come back, the trade of Jake Allen to the Montreal Canadiens. But, of course, this segment was brought to you by our friends at Bodog.net. Head to Bodog for sports odds, poker strategy, and free-to-play casino games. Bodog.net, make a play. The goaltender game of musical chairs continues. Jake Allen to Montreal to back up Carey Price. We talk about that trade coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets. TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.